Hey friends, this is Shadima, also known as the Type A Hippie, and this is the Type A Hippie podcast, Chicast episode 30. So this is essentially a state of the Chicast podcast. And so it's me in my own words, no interviews this week, and I may cry, so just keep that in mind. So Wednesday was International Women's Day, and I would say it's the first one that I actually, in which I participated. And so I worked because everyone is not able to strike or take the day off. That is a privilege, and I didn't take the day off. And I chose to resist by not paying anything for the day, meaning I wasn't going to purchase anything until the power went out. So the power went out on the 8th, March 8th at 1:40 p.m. And so I was without power for over 28 hours. So that evening I was going to do a business lunch with a business partner, and so I reached out to a friend to ask her who any women-owned businesses that she could recommend. And so I ended up going to Zola Bistro here in Ann Arbor in the evening after I had run some errands and spent some time with some friends. So I ended up there in the evening, because if I was going to spend money during the day, it was going to be to a woman-owned business or minority-owned business. So I did that. But it was the first time that I actually really thought about the day and what a day without a woman looks like. And it'd be interesting to see the numbers in terms of money that was spent that day compared to Tuesday and compared to Thursday. So just something to think about, of course. So where is this podcast? What am I ruminating on? Kind of what's going on. And so I posted something on Facebook several weeks ago. It was written by John Pavlovitz, and he had written about, when did, you know, compassion become a partisan issue? And so I shared my own experience, lived experience, along with the article. And my post was shared probably 40 times, which is a lot for my post because I don't necessarily have a following, I wouldn't imagine. And it was heartfelt, though. If I say that I'm not bothered because people are nasty to me, that would be a lie. Now, I don't care what people think of me as much as I used to. However, it still bothers me because the very things that they think they see in me is actually what they're doing. So if someone comes to my Facebook page, I have rules. And so they're pretty simple rules. One of the rules is you have to read the article if I posted an article. Another rule is that I won't tolerate any sort of disrespect, even if it's not directed towards me. If it's directed towards other people who are bravely sharing their own experience, like rude comments, ignorant comments, and obviously racist, and any of the other is comments or phobic comments will be deleted. I also say that like an open discussion is welcome, and then as soon as it starts turning, I shut it down because these are this is my house, my rules. I also invite people, if they want, to unfollow me, to unfriend me, or to block me. And some people have taken me up on that. So two men have taken me up on it, two white men probably in their 50s, because they were bullies. And they came to my page arguing. They were not it was clear that they weren't interested in any open, honest discussion, a difference of opinion. That was not their intention. It appeared, based on their actions, that their intention was solely to be disrespectful. And these are men that I've known for 10 years plus, and they would not dream of talking to me in person in the manner in which they did via Facebook. And so I'm glad that they blocked me because, quite honestly, in comments, I said, "I am going to block you." And within seconds, they had blocked me. So it was definitely appropriate action. I do not hold any grudges against them for blocking me. It still saddens me that the very thing that they accused me of not have being open-minded is the very thing that they were, because it's just not factual. So there's that. The other thing that I've been thinking about is I found a Pocket Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist. He's a Zen Buddhist monk from Vietnam, and there's a part, this might make me cry. I kind of just flipped. That's the way the divine works. And I kind of just flipped open to something, and it was definitely what I needed to read myself. And so I'm just going to read it and share with you all. There are two different passages, actually. So I'll read the first one I saw, and then we'll go from there. So this one's called The Spiritual Dimension of Politics. Every bit of our understanding, compassion, and peace is useful. It is gold. There are many things we can do today to increase these capacities in ourselves. When you take a step, if you can enjoy that step, if your step can bring you more stability and freedom, then you are serving the world. It is with that kind of peace and stability that you can serve. If you don't have the qualities of stability, peace, and freedom inside you, then no matter what you do, you cannot help the world. It is not about doing something, it is about being something, being peace, being hope, being solid. Every action will come out of that because peace, stability, and freedom always seek a way to express themselves in action. That is the spiritual dimension of our reality. The basic issue is our practice of peace, our practice of looking deeply. First of all, we need to allow ourselves to calm down. Without tranquility and serenity, our emotions, anger, and despair will not go away, and we will not be able to look and see the nature of reality. Calming down, becoming serene, is the first step of meditation. The second step is to look deeply to understand. Out of understanding comes compassion, and from this foundation of understanding and compassion, you will be able to see what you can do and what you should refrain from doing. This is meditation. Every one of us has to practice meditation. The politicians, the military, the businessmen. All of us have to practice calming down and looking deeply. You have the support of all of us in doing this. And so, when we think about the spirituality or the spiritual dimension of politics, and whether or not I'm understanding, compassionate, or peaceful. And I was talking to a friend, Anna, at one of her and her partner have this monthly event. It's tomorrow night, and I'm really excited about it. And so we just talk about a lot of different things, and we largely talk about politics and how to better advocate and how to continue to be activists. And a month ago, we were talking, and she said it's like an orchestra. And so the, strings, and you have the brass, the percussionists, and so the brass, they, stagger their breaths, right? So that it's not apparent that one person's breathing while everyone else is playing, and then the next person breathes when they're done breathing. And so, it's really important to tap out. I was listening to the Love Activist podcast by one of my best friends, Stephanie Morris, and she was interviewing another one of our friends, Gina Pollard, and they were just talking about how it's important to self-care when you do this work and you take breaks. and you take much needed breaks, and then everyone else is working while you take your break, and then you come back so that someone else can take a break. And when you look at the animal kingdom, if one elephant is sick, or some group of animals is really cold and one is on the outer edge, they go to the middle, everyone else supports them while they warm up, and then they come to the outer edge. And so, for me personally, I celebrated a significant milestone on March 1st, 2017. So, a few days ago, several days ago. And I know for me, I was very broken when I came to this spiritual community, if you will. And so I was in the middle while they all circled around me. And then when I felt well again, I came to the outer edge so that someone else that was broken went to the middle. And it brings tears to my eyes because I've been reading a lot of different things, as I believe many of us have, watching different things. I watched Hidden Figures and I vacillated between pride in like cultural pride, American pride, that these African American women played such a significant role and they literally were hidden figures, and that made me angry. And sad, to be honest, about the racism and division and segregation that was occurring at that time. And so I went back and forth, right? And then I just watched this movie Crash, and it's not a new movie. In fact, it's 12 years old. It was released in 2005. And I think about And it's all about racism, discrimination, assumptions, just all that we're dealing with right now, you know? And it saddens me that 12 years later, some of the same things are happening. And that's the same thing with Hidden Figures. Like, that took place in the 60s. And we're in 2017 and we still have, I still make less than my white male counterparts because of my gender and because of the color of my skin. And for no other reason. And by the way, those aren't good reasons, you know. And so that's why there was the women's marches, which 3 million people around the globe participated. And that's why there is a day without women. And that's why there is a Black Lives Matter movement. Sometimes people erroneously believe that the word only is in front of Black Lives Matters. No one said only Black Lives Matter. That's not a thing. If Black lives really mattered, no one would have to say that Black lives mattered. But because they don't, based on what we see in this country and the number of Black lives that have been lost in the middle of the street, unarmed Black lives, that's why the movement was born. And then I think about police officers and the road that they've chosen. So, I didn't choose my gender. I didn't choose the color of my skin. I didn't choose the city in which I was born. I didn't choose the parents that I have. And a police officer chooses that role, and they've chosen that job, that career path. And at the same time, I made a decision for me several years ago, that when I could safely approach a police officer, meaning they were not in the middle of a traffic stop or a heightened, unsafe emergency situation, I would approach them and thank them for their service. Mind you, it's their job. And they've made a vow to protect and serve. And at the same time, I don't think that they get thanked enough. My hope is that when they see someone that looks like me, they don't automatically assume one thing. My hope is that at some point, police officers will address the trauma that they experience on a very regular basis so that when they have a loaded gun, they are able to make a decision that is for the betterment of all of society. My hope is that one day, if there is a bad apple on the police force in which they're a part, they will make the difficult, courageous decision to stand up and speak up against racism, against discrimination, institutional racism, homophobia, xenophobia, transphobia, sexism. So that they realize and can say, you do not represent the force or the mission of this police force. So that the bad apples get tossed out. So that everyone's not painted with the same brush. My hope is that they will take a look at their own possible prejudices and assumptions and do the work so that they go into their jobs day in, day out, really protecting and serving the communities in which they've made a vow. So I do things that aren't necessarily popular, even with my friends, because I have hope. I have hope. I have peace. I have some measure of stability, compassion, and understanding. And it doesn't mean that it's perfect. It doesn't mean that I'm perfect. Because I'm not perfect. At all. Not even close. But I'm willing to take a look and do something different. That's the truth. So, where are we at? A lot's going on, different executive orders, and there's recently been the Muslim ban 2.0. So I guess Iraq is no longer on there. So it's six majority Muslim countries that are now in the ban, and Hawaii is the first state that has sued based on their thought that this is unconstitutional. And I believe more will follow. And what saddens me about all of this is that if we're taking a look at the real situation, if we're looking at safety, because it is not bad to want to be safe. I want to be safe. I want my nephews to be safe. I want my family to be safe. I want my loved ones, friends, family to be safe. That's not a problem, friends. The issue is that when we don't look at reality for what it is. I posted something else. In 1995, Timothy McVeigh, a white male, bombed a building in Oklahoma City. 20 years later, Dylann Roof opened fire during a Bible study in Charleston, South Carolina. It was a hate crime. He's white. The victims were all African American. He walked in under the guise of participating in said Bible study, and they welcomed him. They had open arms to their killer, and they didn't even know it. And that was just in 2015. So when we say that we want to protect ourselves from them, we have to ask ourselves, who is them? Because really, numerically, if we look at the facts, them is amongst us here in the US, not from Muslim majority countries. And some of the countries that have caused us harm are not included in that ban because of number 45's business interests, which we don't know the full extent of because he's been the only one who's refused to release his tax returns. So we really have to think about this critically. And yes, emotion is part of all of this. I get it. I was grieving after the election. It is not a secret where I fall. And at the same time, I am able to extend grace and mercy and be open-minded and attempt to see both sides or all sides. And then there are just some things that are wrong, friends. They're just wrong. They're just wrong. Lately, actually Friday, I was walking out of work and I was getting ready to walk over to the bus stop so that I could ride the bus further down campus to get my car. And I saw a group of four Muslim women, and I wearing hijab, so the head covering. And I just stopped and I said, I want you to know that even if it feels like everyone doesn't want you here, it's just not true. The majority of people are so glad and are grateful that you're here. I'm one of those people. I'm really glad that you're here. I'm grateful that you're here. And even if it feels like that's not the case, I want you to hear from me the truth. And the woman just said, "Oh my God, thank you so much for saying that. Can I hug you?" And I was like, "Oh, absolutely, you know." And I said that we really need to stick together. Those of us in marginalized communities need to stick together. We can't afford to have discord amongst ourselves. Because why? I don't really think it's beneficial to go down the path of we have it worse. I don't really think that's helpful. We get to link arms and walk side by side and speak up and speak out when we see things that don't sit well with our souls. That's why I talk to police officers. Just because I believe that Black Lives Matter does not mean that I don't have, I don't know, common decency, respect for police officers. I just wish the really good ones, which I know that there are plenty of, would speak up and out against the bad ones. I don't think that's a difficult request. It's really not. I wish overwhelmingly police forces would do more cultural sensitivity and awareness training, especially if you the color of your skin and your cultural upbringing doesn't match where you've been placed in your job. Wouldn't you want to be the very best and familiarize yourself with other cultures, maybe different languages, so that you understand the people that you're working with? I mean, the medical field can do a better job as well. There are cultural nuances that there's no way to know everything perfectly, especially if you're only one culture or even a melange of them. But if you were raised in one place and haven't come across people who are different than you, it's probably going to be a rough road, especially if you allow your fear to take over. Different does not mean dangerous. My friend Allison has that shirt. And I really wish that people would understand that. I contributed to a Kickstarter campaign. I think it's the only one I have. And it's called Equally Immigrant. And I was really touched by it because essentially everyone's an immigrant. We have Russian immigrants, we have Nigerian immigrants, we have French immigrants, we have Jamaican immigrants, we have Argentine immigrants. We have French immigrants, Italian immigrants, Irish immigrants, Ghanaian immigrants, South African immigrants, Kenyan immigrants, people from the Congo, people from Egypt, Israeli immigrants, Palestinian immigrants, Iraqi immigrants, Iranian immigrants, Mexican immigrants, Japanese immigrants. And when we start building walls instead of bridges, what do we think is going to happen? We're shutting ourselves out and away from the very thing that is the best of us. That is unacceptable to me, which is why I do what I do. It's not okay. So I flipped to this one, Mindful Communication. In the same book, it says, today communication between individuals, families, and nations has become very difficult. That's an understatement. However, there are concrete ways to train ourselves to communicate nonviolently so that compassion for one another is awakened and mutual understanding becomes possible again. Speaking and listening with compassion are the essential practices of nonviolent communication. Mindful communication means to be aware of what we are saying and to use conscious, loving speech. It also means listening deeply to the other person to hear what is being said and what is not being said. We can use these methods in any situation, at any time, wherever we are. For our body to be healthy, our heart must pump a constant flow of blood. For our relationships to be healthy, we need a constant flow of mindful communication. Yet many people find it difficult to communicate effectively because they have so much frustration and anger built up inside. Even when we come to another person with sincere goodwill and the intention to listen, if we are unable to use calm, loving speech, there is no hope that the other person will hear us and understand what we are trying to say. We may intend to use calm and loving speech, but often as we start speaking, our pain, despair, and fear emerge. In spite of our best intentions, we start to blame, complain, and judge harshly. Our speech begins to reverberate with the kind of energy that turns people against us because they cannot bear to hear what we are saying. Communication breaks down. When this happens, we need to learn or to relearn how to communicate. How then do we reach the point where we are able to listen deeply to one another and to use loving speech? To do this, we first have to practice taking care of our own pain and anger. By practicing mindful breathing and mindful walking, we strengthen the energy of mindfulness within us. We may need to practice and train ourselves for several weeks or even several months before we can overcome our pain and use loving speech. When our mindfulness is strong, it is much easier to look deeply into a situation and to give rise to understanding and compassion. With the energy of mindfulness, we can overcome our pain and use loving speech. The same is true about our ability to listen deeply. If we have not been able to embrace and transform our own hurt and anger, it will be difficult to listen to another person's suffering, especially if the other person's speech is full of negative judgments, misperceptions, and blaming. In our heart, we know that listening is what we should do, and no doubt we have often tried our best. Yet frequently, after a few minutes, we no longer can bear to listen to even one more word. We feel overwhelmed, even though we have vowed that, regardless of the provocation or unjust assertions, we would stay and listen with compassion. We just cannot do it. Our good intentions evaporate because we are unable to handle the pain welling up within ourselves. Yet, if we can prevail and listen for only 1 hour, the other person will obtain a great deal of relief. Listening with an open heart, we are able to keep compassion alive. Then we give the other person a real chance to express his or her feelings. Such listening requires training and practice. The practices of mindful breathing and mindful walking can help transform the seeds of anger and irritation in us and allow us to open our hearts to listen with love and compassion to the other person. So I had an interesting experience a couple weeks ago. I had posted something on Facebook, and a friend of mine took what I posted personally. It was a post actually about a celebrity, and it was not directed towards anyone. And at the same time, anyone could have read that and taken what they could use and leave the rest. And so it turned into something that I wasn't even sure how it got there. And it was very hurtful to me. I did not relay this to my friend because I'm not necessarily that type of person. I will when the time is right, but it was very hurtful because I felt like my own experience was completely minimized because they took something that I said or that I wrote or shared personally. So they personalized something that was not directed towards them. And as a result, it ruined possibly an opportunity, at least at that point, to discuss further. And that was, like I said, hurtful because I did not feel respected or listened to. So this is a good one. Finding your path. Great divides. Cultivate a habit of healthy stopping. The interludes between activities are the punctuation points of our lives, offering opportunities for reflecting on and digesting experiences. So this is from Mindfulness for Black Dogs and Blue Days by Richard Gilpin. So the great divides and healthy stopping. So that's what this podcast is about, just taking stock on where I am and sharing with you all kind of a combination of different readings that I'm into. My friend Gina said, she was talking about red letter Christians, or Christ followers. And I thought that was just so awesome. You know, someone asked me if I was a Christian. Actually, it's come up a couple times lately. And I'm like, I don't really like that word anymore. It doesn't really describe me, because I feel like the Christian faith, or many, lots of the church, you know, different ministries have kind of failed on this just basic human rights. Loving people, loving the divine and loving people. Because really, what difference does it matter? Like, what difference does it make if someone identifies as one gender and they want to use the restroom? So I'll ask again, what difference does it make? Someone going into the bathroom, selecting a bathroom that they feel most comfortable with. That has no bearing on my life whatsoever. None. And a lot of people in faith communities that call themselves Christians are making a big deal about this. People just want to urinate, is really the bottom line. And if you're concerned about trans people are the victims of sexual assault. They're not the perpetrators of it. So if your concern is abuse, then perhaps you may want to allow people to go to the restrooms that they feel most identifies them. Just a thought. One of my friends, he's hysterical, Steven, he posts great questions on Facebook. And after gay marriage passed, I think in 2015, maybe, he posted, men, if you have a problem with gay marriage, don't marry a man. Problem solved. Women, if you have a problem with gay marriage, don't marry women. Problem solved. And I love that. And I it's ingrained in my brain forever. Like, because it's so true. Two people who love each other marrying one another has no bearing on any straight couples that I know. None. Two gay people or same-sex people. None. And it doesn't destroy the sanctity of marriage, because many people who identify as Christian have been married more than one time. So if you're concerned with sanctity of marriage, perhaps you talk to people in your own church that have been married more than one time. I'm just pointing out the obvious, friends. We used to talk about this with interracial couples, and that was only 50 years ago. I tend to date interracially. Like, it would not have been allowed. I mean, definitely not marriage. Why? Two grown adult people who want to get married. What business is it of yours? I just don't understand. Like, I am truly baffled. If someone can tell me why they have a problem with some of the things that I have mentioned, I will listen. So we can have an open, honest dialogue. Abortion. I posted something on Melinda Gates donating $120 million to, no, that's a lie, more than $120 million. She vows to pay for 120 million women's birth control contraceptives until 2020. One of the men who blocked me came on arguing about abortion. We weren't even talking about abortion, so he already broke the rules because he didn't read the damn article. And he wrote really nasty comments, which got deleted because I told him I was going to continue to delete. I said, you're not going to house your web of lies on my Facebook page or threads. So my question to him, which he never answered, was, what does this have to do with him personally? He said it's taxpayer money. Wrong. Melinda Gates' money, not his. So why is it a problem if someone makes a choice, a difficult choice, to have an abortion? How does it have an impact on you personally if you're against this? I'd like to know. Send me an email. Chidima@thetypeahippie.com so we can dialogue. Why wouldn't you support or believe a sexual assault survivor or domestic violence survivor? Washtenaw County has a the word is escaping me. We have a program, but that's not even the right word. And it's called Start by Believing. It's kind of sad that we even have to say this. Because if survivors were believed, we wouldn't even have to say we have to start by believing. When will people stop believing the hype of the war on drugs? I don't know. Maybe because now there's an epidemic. Maybe now we have a better understanding that this is a chronic illness, substance use disorder, alcoholism, addiction, not unlike cancer, lupus. And when it's treated like chronic illness, people recover and they're in long-term recovery. When will we start doing a better job with mental illness? Maybe these wars that we have been waging that actually hurt people, like the war on drugs, the war on welfare and or poverty, the war on terror. Maybe we'll understand that it's really a war on people. Because this war on terror has turned into something else, right? War on the other. War on people like that. Someone posted on that same article thread, or the thread with the Melinda Gates article. They posted, well, if they would not be so lazy in regards to abortion, mind you, friends, the article was not even on abortion, it was on contraceptives, like birth control. And I asked the person who had written this, who is they? Like, who is lazy? Of course, friends, I did not get a response, but I'd like to know. Because if I am you and you are me and there are no others, there's no us versus them, then who is they? Because I'm talking about myself then, right? If I recognize just because I wear a cross necklace that my sister is Muslim, so anyone that I go up to that is Muslim, that I say, I'm really glad that you're here. I want you to know that I am with you. That person is my sister. So don't you think it would be a little bit more challenging for me to start coming up with some stories of what they're doing and how maybe they don't deserve to be here and or their religion dictates hate. I've seen a lot more hate from people who claim Christ. Just saying. You know, there's an overwhelming amount of hope that I feel because I am not alone, and I know that. There are activists all over this planet doing work, taking a break, doing work, taking a break, doing work, taking a break. And I'm incredibly grateful. My heart is full. Extremely full. There are the Christine Watsons. There are the Rachel Phillips. There are the April Bautistas. There are the Christine Fullers, the Stephanie Morrises, the Mandy Reeds, the Gina Pollards, the John Pavlovitzes, the Glennon Doyle Melton, Jory Micahs, Jen Hatmaker, Margaret Jacobsons. So many people doing the work. I'm not alone. I am not alone. The Anjali Tenejas. The Chibuzor Rashis. The Rabia Chowdhuries. A lot of people are doing work. The Science Mikes, the Rob Bells. So, there's a lot of good work happening. There is still some silence, and that silence is deafening, for sure. The Nyla Christensens. But it's okay. We take our breaks, we do the work. We take our breaks, we do the work. The Ashton Mars. Julie Langs. It's a beautiful thing. So I thank you for being you, for doing your part. All right, so story from Humans of New York. This cute little girl. She's wearing a kimono. It says, two people took my picture before you, so I was already popular. This one might make me cry. So, all right. So, cute photo of some people, of this couple, and it says, these are my parents. They've been married 55 years. 2 years ago, we were all visiting Italy, and I busted the two of them making out in a corner. I snapped a photo. Dad's got mom pinned up against the wall and he's macking her hard. So that's that. Okay, this is the one that might make me cry. It's a little bit longer. So it looks to be an African American. Oh my goodness. That's the first time I've done that. All right. So it's a guy with like green eyes. It says, it's not even about making money for me. It's about gaining respect. Seems that for kids around here, all the respect goes to drug dealers because they're the ones with money. But you know what saved me? Family. Instead of hanging out with friends after school, I'd take the bus from the Bronx to work with my dad in the recycling yard. He'd drive me around in his truck while he was doing pickups and he'd tell me stories. And every one of his stories started the same way. He'd say, I wish that when I was your age, I knew the things that I know now. And he'd also ask me questions. He'd say, when you get a car, are you going to lease it or buy it? He'd say, what stocks do you think we should buy with the money we make today? He'd say, where do you think is the best place to buy a piece of property? I wanted to be a defense lawyer because I wanted to come back and protect my community. I wanted to protect my people from the police. People around here grow up hating the police. But you know what they've done? The police have recruited our people. They've made it more complicated. They've got Dominicans and Puerto Ricans because doing their work for them because they know it's hard to hate your people. But as soon as that badge goes on, it changes you. Once that badge goes on, your people are the boys in blue. It's been tough in law school because, you know, I grew up around here and I've still got some of that ghetto-ness in me. I talk a little different. I came up with this sort of nonchalant attitude, and now I'm competing with a bunch of private school kids that are ruthless. I'm supposed to read 60 pages a night, and I'm really realizing that I don't read as well as I thought I did. I realize that public school kids are at a disadvantage. I did horrible the first year. I almost folded, but I pulled it back together. I took a tough internship that summer and came back strong, because it's destined to happen. So friends, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. My name is Shadima, the type A hippie. Well, first we'll get to this. I honor the place within you where the entire universe resides. I honor the place within you of love, of light, of truth, of peace. I honor the place within you where when you are in that place in you and I am in that place in me, there is only one of us. My name is Shadima, also known as the Type A Hippie. And this is the Type A Hippie podcast, ChiCast episode 30. Have a great one. Namaste.